Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Timber Living Log Cabins. For your perfect workspace, living space or hideaway, timberliving.ie.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
If you think you're above a bit of gossip, you might actually be doing yourself more harm than good. Shane O'Mara joins me on the line now. Good afternoon, Shane.
Hiya, Brendan. How are things?
Good, thanks. And Shane, you're a neuroscientist. You're a professor of experimental brain research at Trinity College Dublin. But you've written this new book, people might have read about it, Talking Heads, The New Science of How Conversation Shapes Our World. And I suppose the big takeaway is that we create the world through the stories we tell, isn't it?
In essence, that's kind of the whole point of the book is to get people to kind of step back from the kind of the hubbub of our everyday lives and think about how it is that we can have these lives and we have them through conversation.
Okay, so basics first. Humans are ultra social.
Absolutely. We are probably the most social species on the planet for a whole variety of reasons. Other species are social. You know, chimpanzees are very social within their own troop, but they're very antisocial and hyper-aggressive against other troops. They're about 20 to 30 times as aggressive to each other as humans are. And orangutans are other kind of close relatives. We're much more social than they are. They are very, very antisocial. They don't hang out very much together. But we humans live in this kind of amazing world where we meet people, we talk to people.
Shane, I'm going to interrupt you there. I'm going to take a break and we see if we can get you back in a better line, okay? Because that's coming in and out a bit there. And I'd say it's a bit irritating for people listening. And this is good stuff, so I want people to hear it properly.
Email brendan at rte.ie. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
That was such a long ad break. I better remind you again, we're talking to Shane O'Mara and we're talking about how conversation shapes the world and his new book, Talking Heads. And Shane, I think we have you back now on a better line, do we?
I hope so.
Yeah, that's much better now. So listen, we covered the basic backdrop to this, humans ultra social, and the other kind of backdrop to it, which it kind of might not be intuitively kind of make sense to people. We all talk about ourselves a lot, and in fact, we don't trust people who don't talk about themselves a lot.
Yeah, in fact, if you do something a little bit, I suppose, I wonder is it unethical, but listen in to people when they're in coffee shops and places like that, and just listen to what people are saying to each other. And what you find is that on average, about 40% of what we say to other people is stuff about ourselves. We humans are great for revealing information to each other, and we do it so consistently and persistently that we're completely unaware of it. And of course, you know, all the social media things that we're all having such arguments about actually are more a consequence rather than a cause of things, because we're telling each other what we think.
Okay, so that's the kind of granular basics of it then. And I if we take this in layers, we get to the bigger picture of shared stories. But I was interested that you think gossip is a good thing. You quote someone in the book saying, without gossip, there'd be no society. So explain how gossip is what you call a pro-social thing.
Yeah, so gossip has a bad name. And we think of gossip in, you know, in the newspapers or whatever about people. And that's kind of what we should think of as malign gossip. But there's also benign gossip. You know, imagine yourself coming into work in a new organization. There's the formal rule book, and you can read that. Or you can talk to the people around you, and you can find out quickly who's somebody you can trust, who's somebody you can go to get a favour done, how do you get your new ID card. You can work through all the kind of explicit rules, or you can take these shortcuts. And we do this all the time in conversation with each other. We try to find out who's good, who's bad, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But it gets even more subtle than that. Gossip actually can play a really important role in terms of how we regulate our own behavior. Because if we think other people are going to talk about us, well, of course, what we want to do is not have people talk about us in a bad way. So we self-regulate, because we know being seen as untrustworthy, being seen as a liar, is a pathway to exclusion in our hyper-social world, as we've already mentioned.
And gossips, you would say, can actually be, they can be well regarded. They can be people with a lot of social capital.
In fact, that's probably the best way of thinking about it is gossips are central to social networks. They have access to lots of information that other people don't have. They're kind of, think of them as information brokers.
Yes.
The guy sitting in the corner of the pub or whatever who hears lots of stuff and passes on lots of stories. Somebody like that's really interesting to be around because you can learn surprising things from them.
And then rapport comes into this as well, which is something you talk about in the book, that a good gossip has to have rapport with people. Explain about what rapport actually is and the importance of it.
Yeah, so rapport is a concept that has comes up in a whole variety of areas. One way of thinking about it is somebody having a good bedside manner. Clinical physicians will say what you need to do is to be able to listen as hard as you can. So somebody who's got good rapport is somebody who's truly interested in what the person is saying. They show them respect during the course of the conversation. They don't sit there waiting for the entry point into the conversation where they can rebut what the person is saying. Instead, what they're doing is they're spending time engaging in active and attentive listening. And that's a hard skill because we want to tell our stuff. But listening to other people is an important thing too. You might learn something from them.
Okay. Now, let's take the bigger picture then, which is that maybe before we get to nations, culture, that what we call culture is actually kind of built from conversations and kind of shared memories, agreed stories, kind of?
Yeah, so there's an important distinction to make between what we might think of as formal history, the history that where historians test hypotheses against the archives, against new sources of information, and all of those kinds of things. And history as we kind of remember it as individuals in society. But not the same thing. And the historian's history is a history that can be revised, and it's a history that's dynamic. Whereas the history that the average person has, you know, if you ask people to recount the details of their country's story, they'll have 5 or 6 bullet points of information.
Yeah.
They'll know that they take pride in certain things, and they know that there should be silence attending other things. So what people individually remember and what we think of as formal history are really two very, very different things.
That silence you mentioned, so I suppose that's the flip side of like the greatness of shared memories and agreed stories is that, and like we definitely, this is true in Ireland, like that we can be fairly brutal about leaving out inconvenient truths then out of the narrative we all agree on, yeah?
And in fact, that's a great phrase, the inconvenient truth. The job of the historian, of course, is to find out the inconvenient truth. But the job of us when we're sitting together in our groups is to bind ourselves together. And what we want to do is talk about the positive stuff and leave out the bad stuff. So, yeah, absolutely. Silence is one of those ways where we pass on by important pieces of our story and coming to kind of reconcile ourselves, you know, even as Irish people to our past, involves turning over those rocks and having a look at those inconvenient truths.
Okay, but we can, we saw all the conversation about Sinead O'Connor over the past few weeks, we can be pretty tough on people who do go against the kind of whatever the current agreed conversation is, can't we?
Oh, we can and we are. And, you know, talk to anybody who's been a quote, revisionist historian, and you'll discover, you know, the war wounds that they have when they're trying to complexify what is a simplified narrative that we individuals have. And I'm not speaking against the stories that we have. You know, we're not professional historians, but we should be open to the idea that what we think at a particular moment in time can and should change, and the facts change. We learn more about ourselves and our past.
Yeah, you in allied to that, you mentioned culture wars in the book, which we tend to think of as a recent phenomenon, but you kind of feel they're nothing new, that it's people arguing over which version of a story is more true.
Yeah, but culture wars have been around forever, and they'll be around, I think, as long as humans are around, because what people are doing is getting very angry about what other people think about what they should be thinking. Really kind of meta way of looking at the world. But, you know, if you go back 200 or 300 years, people were having wars and putting each other to the sword over the wording of one version of the Christian Bible versus another. And we're not so very far from that on this island. And that is fundamentally a war of culture. It's a war of words about what people think other people should be thinking. And this will go on because this is part and parcel of what the human experience is.
And then a nation, it then is you would say, is kind of a shared, agreed story or narrative or a shared version of reality, kind of.
Yeah, so if you think about the nations of the world, you know, back in 1990, there were about 180 or 185 countries. We're now at around 202 or 203, there's been, depending on your count. There's about 40 new countries have come into existence, some peacefully, some not. Some wish to come into existence. The Czech Republic and the Slovak Republic is a really good example of a single nation that divided in two peacefully without any trouble. The key question really is, how do these come together? And I think the best answer was given by the late Irish political scientist Benedict Anderson, that nations are imagined communities. We tell ourselves what the story of our nation is. This allows us to bind ourselves to others who are of our nation, and it allows us to define the outgroup. And what I've tried to do in this book is take that as a starting point and say, well, how is that possible given the brains that we have? And it turns out, actually, it's eminently possible because the brain systems that are involved in learning and memory are also the same brain systems that are involved in imagination. And they're also the same brain systems that are involved in what we call spatial cognition. In other words, mapping our world.
And I thought what was interesting as well is that when you say all those things, the person that can bring all that together and often bring a nation together, often even magic up a nation out of nowhere, is the great orator. And he's central to this story, he or she, because the great orator, I suppose, it's a kind of a person who can get everyone on board with a shared view of the past and the future, isn't it?
It is. And there are, you know, numerous examples of great orators that have been able to do this. And their words ring through the ages. You know, you see these great books of the great speeches of the years. And what the great orators do is offer a unified vision of where the nation has come from. They're able to push the appropriate emotional buttons. They're able to get everybody in sync together, and they're able to set out a vision of where we should be travelling to. So this is what we refer to in neuroscience as mental time travel. We're centred in the present moment. We travel back, we travel forward, and the great orator is somebody who can evoke a future that is really positive and is one that people will want to journey to. And it's in a sense, a kind of a commonplace phenomenon. You know, if you think of great comedians, they do exactly the same thing. They get everybody poised together in silence, waiting to hear the punchline. Everybody breathes slowly together in synchrony. And then you get this emotional release, this guffaw, which is immensely pleasurable when the comedian hits the punchline appropriately.
Okay, so it's interesting. It's beyond logic, really. It's about getting everyone humming on the same wavelength. Listen, just to finish up, you kind of put in a postscript to the book. The book, by the way, people might find it's slightly challenging. It's not an academic text completely, but it is slightly challenging, but it is ultimately very rewarding. You put in a postscript, Shane, a kind of post-pandemic, but you were saying that We in these collective imaginings, we remember our wars more than our plagues in our agreed stories. You give the example of the Spanish flu. Are we doing it again when it comes to COVID?
I fear we possibly are. That's in the rearview mirror. The problem, of course, with COVID is that there isn't an enemy that you can point the finger to. It's not a personal entity. In war, you can point to a face, you can point to a country, you can point to a person. You can't have this kind of adversarial, parasocial relationship with a virus. You just get immunized against the damn thing.
So listen, basically, it's everything is in our heads. It's all made up. It's all imagined, as long as everyone agrees in it. Look, it's fascinating stuff, Shane, and we only really skimmed the surface of it there, but thank you very much. And the book is called Talking Heads, The New Science of How Conversation Shapes Our World. It's published by the Bodily Head, and Shane O'Mara, people can look at your Substack at brainpizza.substack.com. Thanks a million, Shane.
Thank you, Brendan. Appreciate that.